Welcome to the Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast. My name is John Summers Flanagan, and I am honored to be the co-host of this wonderful parenting podcast.
And I'm Sarah Polinchek. I, too, am honored. Thank you.
All right. Well, I'm honored to work with you, Sarah. Thanks for being here, because it would be a less good show if I was here alone.
Oh, well, thanks.
All right. Today's topic, discipline.
More discipline.
Part two.
Yes. We could have a lot of parts of discipline. There's a lot to it.
We could have a bazillion shows on discipline.
Yeah, we've discussed sort of the fundamental needs and the common types of parenting styles, and today we're going to move more into the specific strategies. It's still pretty foundational. I mean, this is core parenting stuff, but a little more specific. We're going to focus in a little today.
Right, and we're still general in the sense that we're not going to talk about specific age groups, but just really general strategies that parents can use to teach their children what's okay and what's not okay.
I think what's nice about sort of having these core concepts down about the idea of what discipline really is, which is to teach, what we discussed last time, is that, you know, when you get stuck, you can draw on this. It's really foundational once you get the essence of what this means.
Yeah. And so one of the thoughts that comes to mind, I guess, question for you, Sarah, is why do we need these strategies? Why should we know about strategies in advance of any potential behavior problem that might happen in our families?
Well, lots of reasons. The one that jumps into my mind, though, is because if we don't have a plan or a strategy, we just react in the moment. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes those reactions come from places that aren't ideal. They're not places where we think, oh, that was a good move.
So one of the dangers of not having a plan or a strategy that you've thought about previously is you'll go back to some old bad ideas and that it'll be reactive instead of proactive.
Yeah, our default, you know, often comes from the way we were parented, which I'm sure there were some really great things that happened and some things that we don't care to repeat. But if we're not thoughtful about it, strategic about it, planful about it, then we're just going to repeat those old habits in the moment.
Right, and I've talked with a lot of parents who struggle with that. They'll have this kind of, I refer to it as an empty brain syndrome. They're in the moment. Yeah. Their child has maybe, you know, done something that's inappropriate. Talk back, you know, maybe
something rude.
Rude, sarcastic. Maybe used a word that the parent is not wanting the child to use.
Right, which triggers us automatically.
It already triggers us. And so when there's a chance of us getting triggered, there's that reactive kind of response that we can have. And a lot of parents have said they have this empty brain, and then they go back to something that's abusive that they experienced, that they had sworn to themselves that they would never do. And then they hear their mom's or their dad's voice coming out of their mouth, and they're yelling. And they can hear the yelling, and they feel like it's the right thing to do in the moment, but there are also lots of regrets afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a tough spot to be in. It takes a lot of... This is hard. We've discussed that a lot, too. This doing this the way that we want to do this with our kids, is it takes the planning. It's harder work than just reacting. Reacting is kind of easy, really. It's not pretty all the time, but it's easier.
Well, and it's much easier for us to just by default, like you said, parent the way our parents did it. And that doesn't mean, I mean, many of our parents had great ideas and were wonderful parents, but I feel like as... I guess in the 21st century, that there are some new challenges and new problems that are presented to us as parents, and so that we need to be able to move beyond what our parents did.
Right. I mean, new challenges and new problems, but also we have new, there's new research. I mean, we have new awareness about maybe some more ideal ways to work some of these things out.
Right. And the practically perfect parent would know a little bit about that research.
Just a little, yes.
So the stuff we're going to talk about today is broadly research-based, and I think one of the things that comes to mind to me that is really important for us to think about is that parents have power, caretakers have power and influence, and that we want to use that power and influence. And one of the things that parents often say is that I want to be a positive influence on my kids. I want to raise children who are happy and healthy, and who stay out of jail.
Yeah, I think most parents would agree.
Yeah. And the way that happens is by exerting some intentional influence on the lives of our children. And that involves teaching and discipline. And so we're right back to that core definition of discipline, and that's teaching. But as parents, we have a unique opportunity to exert our power and influence in a positive way.
Mm-hmm. Do you have some specific ways?
Well, you know, there's a woman named Mary Wood who wrote about social power. And one of the things that I wrote, I took some of her ideas and I sort of shifted it into parenting. And it's about the adult model for power and influence. And there are really four different kinds of power and influence parents can use. The basic one that we should use the most is relationship power. We should develop a positive relationship with our children. Mm-hmm. We should have empathy and compassion. We should listen to them. We should expect them to listen to us. Mm-hmm. I mean, and have that kind of relationship so that we, you know, put a little deposit in the emotional bank account of one another. And therefore, when you want something from your child's more likely to respond in a positive way. When you set a limit for your child's more likely to cooperate. And so with these relationship powers, we have that as our foundation.
When you talk about that, I just think of the word connection, mm-hmm. right? You know, I think we talked about the need for belonging in the last episode, and that just all feels like it all belongs in the same camp to me. Yep. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I think connecting is a great word to use for it.
Mm-hmm.
So the second level, and I think of this as a pyramid or a triangle, the bottom, the foundation is relationship power. The next mm-hmm. level up is problem-solving power, and that really involves us working with our children to solve the dilemmas or the problems we have in our family. And that might be a simple problem, like what to have for dinner, mm-hmm. or which movie we're going to watch together, what channel of the television we're going to have on,
mm-hmm.
whether our children have any screens in their own rooms.
Right, all of that stuff. Tell me a little bit more, what do you mean exactly about problem-solving power? I want to get a better picture of it.
Well, you know, I think a lot of times parents feel alone and as if they need to be the authority and make the decision about everything in the household and the family. Now, I don't think it's right for us to put our children in the position of making those decisions, but I do think that, for example, let's say you're having a homework issue mm-hmm. with your child and your child is not doing homework. Well, that's a problem, and yeah. we need to sit down on occasion with our child and talk through, well, how do we solve this problem? And as you know, there's this technique called mutual problem solving, mm-hmm. and we're going to probably have a whole show about it. But it's really an opportunity for the parent and the child to sit down and say, well, what's not working?
Yes.
How come we're not getting this homework done? And what are some things we could do differently? And it becomes a process where the parent and the child together are trying to solve a problem that has emerged or developed in the family.
So we talked about this last time too, right? How cool would it be if we were teaching our kids how to work on problem solving and how to contribute? And then the other thing is last time we talked about that idea of usefulness. Mm-hmm. And when we ask kids their opinion on things and we have them share in this whole process, they feel more useful, which we know is one of the pivotal, you know, points for healthy development in
right.
kids.
It's a big need.
So cool. We're accomplishing so many things all at the same time.
So problem-solving power is just working with kids to resolve problems between parent and child, but also that happen in the family.
Yeah.
And the more we can work with our children, the more useful they'll feel and the more they belong in the family and we're working together and we have an attitude in the family of, you know, we may not always get things perfectly, but we're going to work on it. We're going to talk about it. We're going to try to solve the problems together.
And I know something that whenever anybody helps come up with a solution, they're mm-hmm. way more invested in the outcome, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I've noticed
that's
that.
Sort of true.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I come up with a solution,
yeah,
I really
like it
want
a little
it to
bit
work.
Better.
And so that's the second level. And the third level is indirect power. And those are some little kinds of manipulative things that we can do, like if your child is not drinking her milk at dinner or whatever it is, and you might say, I bet I can drink my milk faster than you can.
Right.
And so you might play games and indirectly influence your child in one way or another. A mm-hmm. lot of parents rely on that a lot, but there's one kind of indirect power that's huge, and that's modeling.
Oh.
And it's, you know.
Yeah. I do this thing when I'm talking to parents in class and I have them all hold up their hand.
Yeah.
And I make them make the okay sign. And then I demonstrate this where I put my hand on my chin and I say, everybody put their hand on their cheek. And guess what everybody does? Instead of listening to what I said, they're watching what I do.
Exactly.
And so nobody has put it on their chin. They've all put it on their cheek. This is getting confusing, but you know, you get the idea.
I mean,
they're watching what I do, even though the words were clearly different.
Right.
Yeah.
And you could do it in a more simple way. You could just say, everybody put your hand on your head, and then you just put it on your chest.
There you go.
And they would put their hand on their chest, and you said head. But, you know, the words are important, but if there's a discrepancy between words and behavior, the kids are going to learn about the behavior.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we have to be aware we're being watched at all times.
Yep. We are the role models. Got to do everything perfectly.
Yes.
Oh, wait.
Oh, practically.
Practically, yes. Perfectly. And so then the fourth thing on the top of the pyramid, and it is something we do when we need to, is direct power. And that's the enforcement of limits. Mm-hmm. That's action discipline when you say, you know, it's not okay that you were disrespectful and just looked at your phone when we had the guest over, mm-hmm. and so you have now lost the privileges of your phone for mm-hmm. the next day.
Yeah.
And that's important. You're the one who pays the phone bill. Mm-hmm. Got to be clear about that. Mm-hmm. And so you own the rights to turn off the phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so you're saying that that's an important piece of discipline, but maybe not the one that we fall back on all the time. It's at the top of the triangle, right?
We want to use it when we need to.
Okay.
And sometimes the things that children remember are the things that happen infrequently. They kind of stand out. Oh, remember that time when, and you know, we have this historical memory in our family mm-hmm. of one time Rita grounded one of our daughters. Mm-hmm. It only took once. She wasn't grounding her all the time, but grounding the daughter one time now is something we speak of forever.
The legend.
Yes.
Way more than if you're saying every week, oh, I'm grounded again.
Right.
Right? It's way more effective when it's a big deal.
It's used briefly and it stands out.
Yeah.
All right. So that's sort of a power and influence model that I think is really useful. We'll give some resources where people can get more information about that later.
Okay.
But now it's probably time for some cha-ching.
Okay, cha-ching. This is where we have this big money tips for people.
Right, because it's just as good as getting $100 bills. If Sarah Polinchek was standing on the corner handing out $100 bills, you're going to give us...
You'd rather have this.
I'd rather have this.
Yeah.
Who wants that $100?
Right.
So you might have an idea, something you're going to share?
Well, I was going to talk a little bit about special time.
Yes.
Okay. So when I talk to parents about special time, I call this the emotional vitamin. I like it.
Vitamin pill.
Again, it's just more foundational stuff. This isn't something you're reacting to, like, oh, you've just done something and now we're going to have special time to try to fix that little problem, right? Mm-hmm. This is just a nice addition to any family. I like starting this, especially with younger kids. And parents, when I talk about them, they'll say, oh, we have special time. We do that. Well, I think what parents are talking about in that moment is quality time, which is really important too. But special time is different. It's a distinct 15 to 20 minute period of time. I would recommend you set the timer to make it really clear. And that's when the parent is relinquishing all of their power over to their child. And so the child gets to be in charge for that 15 to 20 minute period of time.
Okay. So do you do this every day?
No. Just like you were saying with the grounding. I mean, this should be special. You know, it's not going to happen every day. And I also don't think the expectation of parents doing something like this every day is realistic. Because, you know, everybody's busy. We have to take that into account. If you could pull this off once, twice, maybe even three times a week, you know, that would be amazing.
Okay. So that would be an amazing feat to do it three times a week. But maybe two, maybe one time a week is fine.
It's just fine.
I would say once every 2 weeks might be better than
nothing.
Zero.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and the way this looks is that your child gets to pick whatever activity they want to do. So they're going to be in charge.
Mm-hmm.
The rules, basic rules I always say is that no screen time and nothing destructive.
Right.
And it should be free.
Okay.
Right? I mean, the child can't say, oh, we're going to go to the mall and go shopping. I mean, that's not it.
Mm-hmm.
So ideally, you'd do something just around your home or at the park or whatever, and they get to pick And our job as the parent is to really just be reflecting on what's happening. Mm-hmm. It's kind of hard.
Yeah. Reflecting like being a mirror.
Yeah.
Like your child is maybe playing with really rough with some toys, yeah, and like one toy is stomping on the other one.
Yeah.
And so instead of saying, oh, aww, don't you feel bad for the one that's getting stomped on? Instead, you just say like a mirror,
wow,
oh, one of them's getting stomped on there.
Yeah, one's getting stomped on. So you're just a commentator for whatever is happening and whatever you're observing. And sometimes it's hard. We get ourselves into sticky situations sometimes because sometimes our kids will say really weird things like how rough their childhood is, right?
Oh.
And it's so hard not to stop and go, hey, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
You have a great life.
When I used to do this with my younger daughter, she was really big into playing pretend. And so very quickly it'd be, okay, Dad, you're my little brother and we're running away from home. And we're running away from home because our parents are so mean. And I would want to say immediately, no, we're not. That's just a bunch of BS. You know,
right,
that's
right,
what I wanted to say.
But you didn't.
I didn't say that.
No.
I just said, okay, we're running away from home because our parents are so mean. So I'd just be like a mirror.
Yeah.
And then she'd say, and we're running away because they make us work all the time. We're going to go to an island. And
I'm you're
like,
thinking, you
work.
Don't do any work.
Yeah.
This is a great life.
But.
Right?
You know, what was going on was she was talking about her experience.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my experience was we don't make her do anything.
Right.
But we made her do a few things. And so she was kind of adjusting to, and she was emotionally chewing on the whole idea of getting bossed around by her parents.
Right.
Which was hard for her because she was kind of a bossy girl.
Well, one of the great things this does is, you know, especially you think about a 3, 4, 5, 6, 7-year-old kid, their whole life is laid out for them. They don't have a lot of choices. And if they can have this 20 minutes, that just takes away some of the power and control needs that they might have and that they need to have. I mean, it's fundamental. I mean, that's what they're supposed to be doing is growing towards that independence.
Mm-hmm.
And giving them this little snippet of time is really healthy. And I think it's easy to underestimate how rich this experience can be for kids.
Yeah. Yeah, and I have found that it's especially useful for kids who have gone through a divorce or a separation because they've really lost all sense of control.
Yeah.
And, of course, one boy that I worked with in counseling one time, I was doing this, I was doing special time as a part of the counseling, and I told him, okay, for the next 20 minutes, you're the boss.
Yeah.
And he looked at me, and he just, I've never had any child do this to me before, and he says, he yells, get out.
Oh.
And I said, oh, so you want me to leave? And he yells again, get out. And so he was the boss. He was in charge. I stood up. I said, I guess I'm getting out. And he goes, get out now. And I went out the door. And then as soon as I shut the door, I could hear him on the inside yelling, get back in here.
Oh.
And so I peek in and I go back in and he goes, sit down. And as soon as I sat down, he looks at me and he yells again, get out.
He and really needed to get to work through some stuff.
Oh,
huh?
Boy.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm guessing he was experiencing some things like that maybe at home. But, oh, he was so delighted with that control.
Oh, I bet. And what would you say to the parent who's hearing this going, oh, we can't give that much power to a kid?
Well, I would say, well, you know, if it's 20 minutes twice a week, then the other, on the day you do it, the other 23 hours and 40 minutes, you need to be in charge and making the decisions. But, you know, give them that 20 minutes, let them feel the difference. I really feel like it's good for kids to feel the difference of when they have control and when they don't have control.
Right, because that timer's going to go off pretty quick, right? And then you can tell, okay, now it's over. It's back to
That's
me.
Right. Now Dad's back in charge.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I love special time. When I was at Families First, we would sometimes just call it the magic cure.
Mm-hmm.
And I like your analogy of an emotional vitamin, because some of the latest research on vitamins is that we shouldn't have them every day, but we should have them maybe 2 times a week.
So you have a tip sheet on special time on your blog that's really descriptive. It's really good. I've given it out to lots and lots and lots of parents.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that it's useful.
Yes.
And I just think it's a wonderful strategy. So I would give $100 for that.
Oh, yeah.
So here's my $100 strategy. Okay. It's called character feedback.
Yeah.
One of the things that is true about parents and parenting is that oftentimes we just do absolutely the wrong thing. You know?
So true.
It just seems natural. Uh-huh. And we will yell when yelling is too much. Mm-hmm. We will focus on misbehavior when in fact we should be focusing on the positive behavior, mm-hmm. because we know, like plants, I think what you pay attention to grows, right? Mm-hmm. And exactly. So if you pay too much attention to the negative behaviors, you're going to grow it. And so we should try to minimize how much we pay attention to the misbehavior, and we should pay more attention to the positive behaviors. It's really hard to do because it's unnatural, mm-hmm. but it's something
goes
we should strive for.
Goes against our instincts, for sure. Yeah.
And another thing is we tend to put character feedback onto kids that's negative, you know, and let's say you're my daughter and you have some trouble paying attention, and I might just start saying, Sarah, you have so much trouble paying attention. You need to focus more. And mm-hmm. what is wrong with you? Do you have that ADHD thing? Mm-hmm. And, you know, as soon as I start going into all that, that becomes your identity. Mm-hmm. You absorb some of that message, right?
And I will live up to that expectation, right?
And it might be, I'd say, you're an angry girl or you're a whatever. And mm-hmm. all those negative messages sort of accumulate.
Yeah.
And years ago, with our younger daughter, we were having trouble because she loved candy. Mm-hmm. And so we used character feedback, but we were completely doing it wrong to start. We would say, Riley, you have a sweet tooth. And she started just eating candy, and there would be like, you know, chocolate dripping out of the sides of her mouth. It was like post-Halloween, and she just, mm-hmm. and we knew we had to start setting limits, but we also had to start shifting her identity about that.
Because she heard herself call, I'm a sweet tooth, so this is what I do, I eat candy.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, her mom and I both are psychologists. You would think we would know better, but we finally...
You would think.
And then we got together with Riley's older sister, and the three of us said, oh, let's just try something else. She does kind of eat broccoli sometimes, and so let's just start focusing on, you're the kind of girl who likes her broccoli. Mm-hmm. So I remember the first night we did this, we had broccoli and ranch dressing at the table, and we said, Riley, you are the kind of girl who loves your broccoli, because you know how strong that, you know. She just started gobbling down the broccoli and dipping it in the ranch dressing, and it was a transformation for us. We realized all this time we'd been giving her character feedback in exactly the direction we didn't want.
Right.
And so instead, we shifted, and Riley to this day loves her broccoli, and she's 27.
So it really works.
It really works.
But I just think it's important for parents to reflect on how many comments they might be making that they have no idea are hitting their kids in really big ways. Mm-hmm. You know, the ways we describe them, the way they, when we're talking to other people and they overhear us.
Yep.
Just those, you know, I will say my older son is maybe not the quickest at getting places, getting mm-hmm. out the door. Mm-hmm. And we've had to be so careful to not describe him as, we got to wait for Clayton. He's so slow, you know, because it would be so easy to do that. And I've instructed everybody that comes in contact with him really not to, and to notice, look how fast you are. Wow, yeah. You did it quickly this time. Because I don't want him identifying so much that it even grows
right.
even bigger.
Right.
You know?
You don't want to grow that.
Yeah. And I can't say he's turned into Mr. Speedy because we've been careful about it, but I think it's helped a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's helped him maybe not take on that identity.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. So we have given out $200 worth of cash.
Yeah.
Or metaphorical cash.
Even better.
So time for some resources.
I think so. You know, a really great book that I could recommend is called How to Listen So Parents Will Talk and Talk So Parents Will Listen.
Well,
it's amazing.
It's one of my favorite books also, but that's different than the book How to Talk So Kids Will Listen and Listen So Kids Will Talk, which is an old famous, that was Faber and Maslich.
Right. And the author of the one I'm referring to is none other than John and Rita Summers Flanagan.
Which is why it's one of my favorite books.
Yes. It's a good resource for anyone who's working with parents. And really, I'm not just saying this because I'm sitting here with you, John. It's very digestible and very, very helpful. I think anyone who works with parents, and the vast majority of adults are parents, right? 84% of us are parents.
Right.
So anyone working with parents will find this a great resource.
Well, thank you. It's very, very sweet of you to bring that up. And I'm going to pretend that I didn't encourage you to.
All right.
So I have a recommendation too, and it's a couple of books by a woman named Mary Sheedy Kirchinka, starting with a K.
Yeah.
And the one I like the most and I know the most about is Raising Your Spirited Child. And when I was at Families First, we had a lot of kids, a lot of parents of kids who they would say, I have a challenging child, I have a strong-willed child, mm-hmm. I have a blah, blah child. And they were different words that were kind of negative. And you can see that what Kirchinka has done with this title is she has transformed the strong-willed child into the spirited child.
Character feedback.
Yes.
Right?
She is the master mm-hmm. at that. And so if you want some new ways to think about negative behaviors and frame them in a positive way, this is a fabulous book.
Awesome. Okay.
More recently, and actually the third edition of that one is out right now. It's 2015. But also another book that she wrote probably 5 or 10 years ago is Parents or Kids, Parents, and Power Struggles. And it's a fabulous book for helping parents just avoid some of those chronic power struggles that we can get into with our children.
Mm-hmm. That sounds really helpful. I haven't read that one. I think I should.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
I think it's very helpful.
Okay.
We also have tip sheets.
On your
special time.
Yep, special time tip sheet. That's a really good one.
Right, it's on the blog.
Mm-hmm. JohnSummersFlanagan.com.
All right, we're heading toward the closing.
Yeah.
And I guess what I would like to say is thanks once again to the Charles Engelhard Foundation for sponsoring our podcast series.
Mm-hmm.
And that I just hope that everybody out there can be a practically perfect parent.
Me too. And we're going to have more on this practically perfect positive discipline topic coming up.
Next episode.
Yes. Okay. Thanks, John.
All right. Bye.